is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. We go immediately to our neighbor to the south, Mexico, and concerns at the New York Times, Brett Stevens, observing that the president of Mexico, López Obrador, affectionately called AMLO, remains extremely popular, but there are concerns that there's a concentration of power around AMLO that could continue into the future. His first term and only term ends in 24. Professor, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much. I read in an article that Brett Stevens points to from Foreign Affairs by Denise Dresser that, quote, when Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador took office 4 years ago, he promised to deliver what he branded a fourth transformation, the next in a series of defining junctures in American history. However, writes Denise Dresser, in the name of his agenda, López Obrador has removed checks and balances, weakened autonomous institutions, and seized discretionary control of the budget. Not a good list, Evan. So I need to understand the reference to PRI, the Institutional Revolutionary Party, because although Mr. López Obrador is not a member of PRI, there is a recognizable model of a party remaining in power for a long time. What was PRI? What is its legacy today? Good evening to you.
Well, the PRI is the initial Mexican Revolutionary Institutional Party. It was basically the party that led the very turbulent Mexican Revolution, but ultimately consolidated power and really dominated Mexican politics from about the 1930s until a president from the alternative PAN party, Vicente Fox, displaced them for power. So the PRI had the fame of being kind of, you know, Chicago-style machine politics. There was alternation of power within the PRI. The PRI was seen as oftentimes running a lot of corruption at the state and other levels, and really was seen as kind of having rigged the rules of the game for its own benefit. And so some of the references to AMLO, who, again, comes up from that system. He was once part of the PRI himself many, many years ago before switching over to the PRD and now Morena. He is, again, himself a bit of a machine party style, having been the mayor of Mexico City. And so now in his leadership role, exercising kind of a very personalistic, very, very charismatic leadership. But his own new movement that swept into power with him, Morena, is seen by many people as the new PRI. In other words, it's come to dominate Mexican politics at both the state and national level. And although they lack what they call a supermajority with power to actually change the constitution, he has pushed through a lot of reforms that are seen as undermining free choice in Mexican democracy. For example, trying to replace some of the more independent roles of the national electoral institution with a system that would give more power to the elected politicians, hence the Morena politicians, among the various other things that he's done.
Yes, the immediate concern is something called the INE, which is the Electoral Commission, National Electoral Institute, or INE in the Spanish acronym. What does it do? What are its powers? How is it different from how we run our elections, Professor?
They basically are a, by design, independent body. In other words, trying to put them above politics and who's in charge. But essentially, they organize and run elections. So everything from managing the voter rolls to actually publicity and making sure that media spots and things like that are appropriate. And so, they do certain roles in terms of conducting the elections and certain roles in terms of resolving disputes over whether the elections are being conducted fairly or not. So an organization that has a tremendous amount of power. And thus, if the INE is politicized, like we've seen with similar bodies in places like Venezuela, that really opens up the space for the party in power to begin to run roughshod and rig the rules and the elections to their advantage.
There are protests, Brett Stevens tells us, in Mexico against this proposed idea to turn the National Electoral Institute into an elected body, which would mean that you can campaign for Morena. These are very large protests. Mr. Stevens identifies one as upwards of 250,000. Is that influential? Because I read at the same time that AMLO is consistently popular in the polls.
It is a bit of a duality, John, but certainly Mexicans are very passionate about their democracy. And there is a deep current of people who are distrustful of AMLO in the way that he's taken the government and the country and various different things, everything from his management of the COVID-19 response to his use of the military. Indeed, the military that has taken control of a number of different civic functions, as well as the internal security, a variety of different issues. But perhaps one of the really sensitive points was this INE proposed reform. So again, on the one hand, you have Mexicans who really see themselves as fighting to maintain their democracy. But on the other hand, because AMLO is so personalistic, he spends a lot of time in his morning programs talking directly to the Mexican people, something called the Mañaneras. And so he is genuinely liked, especially by those on the left, those from more marginalized parts of Mexican society, who identify him and essentially trust that he is taking the country in the right direction, even if they might not closely follow politics. And so both things exist at the same time.
Bret Stephens's concerns are three in number, and I'd like you to comment on them. The first is what he calls the ever-expanding role of the military. Now, we've talked about this, Professor. As I understand, the case is made by AMLO and his supporters that the military is responsive, whereas the Mexican civil government, the professionals, are either ambiguous about conducting policy or are not responsive. So he's using the military more and more. Is that a concern for the United States? Does that change results for us?
It's ironic, John, because from the very beginning, AMLO is a candidate, actually campaigned to get the military off of the streets and out of internal security and back to a more traditional role. However, what he discovered is that the Mexican military, especially the Mexican army, because in Mexico you have a fundamental division between the army, referred to as Sedena, and the Navy, SEMAR. But he found with the head of the Mexican army, General Luis Crescencio Sandoval, a great capability, not only to do traditional military things, but to address some of the other challenges that he couldn't get addressed so easily. And so little by little, AMLO has found himself creeping into a greater use of the military. So, they have been put in charge of building airports and supervising various other infrastructure projects. They've put in charge of customs. The Mexican Navy has been put in charge of supervising ports, implementing social programs and in a variety of other things. Now, I would say for the United States, certainly the position, as I understand it, of the Biden administration and the U.S. government in general is that there are certain risks of having the military occupy civilian functions, especially if they do not have the proper authorities and training. It raises issues of civilian control of institutions. So certainly there are some concerns for the United States. However, I would say at least to this point, the Mexican military is highly capable, and I would say they have been thus far respectful of civilian rule in a broad number of ways, despite the appearances, and I think despite the discomfort of having the military have such a large role, especially now taking responsibility over the National Guard for really the key part of providing citizen security and the fight against the cartels across Mexico.
Yes, the cartels. That's the second observation by Bret Stephens, is that he believes that the government, AMLO's government, has capitulated to the drug cartels. This brings us back to that irony. Hugs, not bullets, I think it was the way it was presented when AMLO campaigned. So acceding to the cartels, is that a way of measuring AMLO's government? And what is he thinking, giving part of his country into the hands of gangsters?
Certainly the cartel and the transnational organized crime group problem is not of AMLO's making. It really exploded into the Mexican scene in 2006 when you saw President Felipe Calderon launch the war against the cartels. But that only led to a great number of deaths and really a fragmentation of various different groups. It continued under Enrique Peña Nieto, and it's gotten a lot worse, in part because the situation itself was so serious, especially because you have not only the flows of cocaine largely coming up from Colombia, channeled through groups like the Sinaloa cartel. It used to be the Gulf cartel. Of course, now Jalisco Nueva Generación. And as you alluded to, John, those cartels recently have made a lot of money as well, not only managing opioids and synthetic drugs coming into the United States, but among the synthetics, of course, the big killer of Americans, fentanyl. But part of the problem also was that AMLO, first of all, reorganized the security sector in various different ways that wreaked havoc in that fight. And as also alluded to, AMLO was seen as having essentially backed off some of the pressure against some of the major drug bosses. There's been a lot of criticism because he actually persuaded the United States to release the former head of the Mexican army, General Crescencio Sandoval, who, again, a very credible implication that he was involved directly in supporting the drug cartels. So as soon as the United States agreed to send him back to Mexico, AMLO published and dropped all the charges. He's also put in a national security law that's made it a lot more difficult for the United States to cooperate with Mexico, organizations like the DEA. That's gotten a lot of looks from certain people. And even little things like the fact that AMLO, in a curious fashion, regularly visits the little town of Badiraguato, which happens to be where El Chapo Guzman, one of the key persons of the Sinaloa cartel's mother, lives. This is a little Mexican town that nobody used to visit ever, certainly not a president. He's come so many times now that they actually have a signboard saying, welcome, Mr. President AMLO. And so there's a lot of symbolism. So on the one hand, the question of mismanagement of what was already a tremendously difficult problem, but also there's been some at least speculation that I don't want to say go farther than speculation, but a lot of things that make at least some people wonder whether he is being either deliberately or otherwise easy, at least on some of the cartel heads.
So what is your measure, Professor, at this point about these concerns? 250,000 people in the street about one aspect, the army, the cartels. Is it well-founded that AMLO is thinking of himself as a founding father of another PRI?
Well, I think certainly AMLO is trying to do that. It's a pretty difficult challenge. The key part about the PRI is that the PRI, after the Mexican Revolution, had really managed to rig the rules of the game to sustain themselves in power, but there was kind of maneuvering within the PRI. But the PRI was also a very disciplined party in the way that it managed things in Mexico. Morena has attained in a few short years the level of political domination across the Mexican states and to a certain extent in the Mexican legislature that the PRI had. However, Morena is much more diverse. There's some question of who is going to succeed AMLO, because at least there's a longstanding tradition that you only get to run once. AMLO to date has not tried to change that, although he could still dominate politics from behind the scenes. The two leading candidates, one, Claudia Sheinbaum, the mayor of Mexico City, whose kind of traditional conservative social politics and liberal other politics are basically make her AMLO's preferred choice. But the other one, the foreign minister, Marcelo Ebrard, could be the front runner. And so the diversity of the party, the question of, will AMLO get his way in shaping what comes after him? That's a story that remains to be written. But in a broader sense, there are, I think, some well-founded concerns that AMLO's, despite his personal personality, his ability to connect with the Mexican people, managerially, he's done just a disastrous range of things, whether it's, again, been increases in insecurity or the management of COVID-19 or, the mismanagement of the Mexican system with the dismantling of Insabi or moving against, kind of private sector electricity reform with INE that's caused problems with the United States, or trying to run all oil through the highly, corrupt and inefficient Pemex, which has created problems there. Some difficulties with both the U.S. and Canada over NAFTA violations, which again, puts some risk to what's one of the core drivers of the Mexican economy. So at the end of the day, people are uncomfortable to a certain degree with his style and his authoritarianism and his mismanagement. But he doesn't seem to be positioned to have the level of kind of total control that we once saw with the PRI of the old days.
Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. We're headed to Venezuela via Mexico next, and the question of migration. This is the New World Report. I'm John Batchelor.